Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the Uribe compound. Folks, you know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the three-time, and I do say it again, the three-time award-winning politically direct. And I am, of course, New Jersey's premier journalist and top 100 Latino via the Latino Spirit online magazine, Fernando Uribe. Hope you're all doing well, folks, as we are about to close out the month of May here. Memorial Day weekend just around the corner. Certainly the state reopening, so happy to see that. Took a little longer than I would think it should have taken, but yeah, I'm sure that's up for debate throughout the state, ladies and gentlemen. So, again, as Memorial Day weekend is quickly approaching, seeing mask mandates, being lifted, there's always going to be that worry, right, about people and whether they're vaccinated and everything else. So, again, it's something we'll be keeping an eye on for sure. Hopefully no new cases, and hopefully there's no spikes this summer, which would really throw a wrench into everything. But, again, I want to thank you all for tuning in here, as always, from wherever and however you may be listening throughout the Garden State, and of course, to all my friends throughout the U.S. of A. Now, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic, ladies and gentlemen, write to the show, politically direct, NJ@yahoo.com. Once again, that's politically direct, NJ@yahoo.com. Whether it's, again, a suggestion for guests, maybe a topic that I haven't covered, maybe you have a question, maybe you want me to read it on the air, whatever, guess what? I do answer my emails, and I'll make sure to get promptly back to you. So, again, ladies and gentlemen, politically direct, NJ@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, @politicallydirectNJ. I've been a little behind, I'm not going to lie to you folks, about updating the show's Instagram, but my Instagram, my regular Instagram, @ProfessorFernandoUribe, is, without question, still getting popularity, still getting tons of new likes, many new followers, all organic, by the way. And, again, you can check it out. I know many of you love my Instagram stories because I don't pull any punches, that's for sure. And I'm not shy on there either. So definitely check it out. And also on Twitter, folks, @NoFilterUribe. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct with Fernando Uribe. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. And, of course, our show is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, ladies and gentlemen, remember, check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene anywhere in the state of New Jersey. Ladies and gentlemen, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. And I say this every week because I mean it, but I am immensely grateful to the Graham family for their continued support of this program, specifically Mike Graham, who not only cuts me a check, obviously, which I'm very grateful for, but more importantly, just respecting the show, giving me the creative freedom that I've always wanted when doing stuff like this to put on exceptional programming and bring on guests that people want to hear from and people want to listen to. So, again, I can't say enough about Mike Graham and his support of the show. Of course, to my Insider GM, Peter Melia as well. I tend to bother him a lot, and I'm sure that he gets inundated with some phone calls or texts or DMs about someone being pissed off about me saying something on some broadcast. But in Pete's defense, he's been very patient with me, and he also has been supportive as well. And I can't say enough about, 3 years on the air. When this show started in January 2018, folks, I didn't know what to think about it, you know? I was already doing a local Hudson County-centric podcast during the previous year in 2017. I didn't know what to think about doing one with Insider. And, you know, it's three awards later, hey, the proof is in the pudding. And Politically Direct continues to be as popular a podcast in New Jersey politics as there is. So, again, I'm grateful to them. And certainly all the great journalism that's involved with Insider NJ. And, you know, as someone who's played organized sports, you know, I don't always like my teammates. But you know, what you do on game day is you put all that BS aside and you work together to better the team. And that's what we do at Insider NJ. Because I know for a fact that, you know, not many people like me there in terms of the staff, right? So fellow journalists. I know I piss off some people when I call myself a journalist, but I am. It's as simple as that. And, you know, it starts at the top, obviously, editor-in-chief, great journalist, great columns by Max Pizarro. I know we don't like each other, and that's okay. He doesn't like me. I don't like him. It's probably, I think the dislike is probably predicated on just, you know, good old-fashioned testosterone, you know, guys being guys, you know. But his columns are great. He definitely, you know, will enjoy reading them. Certainly Max is a good a pulse of what's going on in New Jersey politics as any journalist in the state. So you definitely want to check out his columns. Same thing with Jay Lassiter. I mean, Jay and I do not like each other whatsoever. And I can say it openly, and I know he'll say it openly too when he's asked about it. But I give him his due because he's a great journalist. Very interesting columns. Also Fred Snowflack. Actually, Fred and I really like each other. Like, he's been on this show many times. And he's a guy that's contributed, and I'm really grateful for his input here on the show. And if you haven't checked out his weekly columns, I mean, please do so. Because Fred, I'll tell you, is a guy who captivates you with his columns, and he knows how to read the political scene here in the state. And I love, you know, having him on here. And again, listen, there's other great writers too. You have some contributors that offer editorials from time to time, but folks, nobody does New Jersey politics and nobody examines what's going on better than Insider NJ. So if you haven't checked it out, I don't know what you're waiting for, but again, www.insidernj.com. You'll see the subscribe button on the homepage, upper right-hand corner. And once you do, you will see that, you know, once you click on that, you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you're, I don't know, flipping through your phone or on your Mac or your iPad, whatever, and you're maybe watching the morning sports show. Like, that's what I do. I mean, I'm an avid and devoted watcher of Fox Sports. Like, so in the mornings, I'm watching First Things First with Nick Wright and company. And then, of course, and you know, then I'm on Dispute with Skip and Shannon. And, of course, you know, I'm working from home. You know, I check out The Herd with Colin Cowherd at noon. So, you know, from time to time, I'll maybe put on ESPN and listen to Screamin' A. Smith and the other idiot, Max Kellerman, along with the other fool, Molly Rose, whatever her name is, or the other people at ESPN, because I just like sports talk, you know, and I like seeing the debates. But as I'm watching the shows, you know, guess what? I'm on my phone. I'm going through my phone and checking out, as I always like to, what's going on in New Jersey politics. And guess what? That morning intelligence briefing will be right there waiting for you. So, hey, you can't get any better than Insider NJ, folks. You can make sure you like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. Remember to always start and end your day with Insider NJ. All right, folks, as a reminder, the opinions expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, advertisers. So that's always an important reminder, you know, here for the program. Folks, again, you know, just in advance, I hope you're having a good end of May. Like I said, June's right around the corner. Weather's getting nicer. We're being outside more. And guess what? You know, we're able to do more things because at this point last year, man, it was tough. You know, it's tough. You know, it was good weather, but we were stuck home, you know, pretty much under lockdown, as they said. And, you know, a year later, cases have dropped dramatically, thank the Lord. People getting vaccinated, and certainly that is helping tremendously. And I understand there are people out there who don't want to get vaccinated, who have not gotten vaccinated. As a matter of fact, I'm not vaccinated, and, you know, I've been okay. I know at some point, again, working in higher education, it's going to get forced on me eventually as we will have to return to campus in September. And guess what? We're going to have to be vaccinated if you want to go back to school. So, you know, when that moment comes, I'll do that and I'll go. That's fine. You know, just right now I've been very fortunate. You know, I take care of myself and I'm blessed with an incredible immune system. And for those of you that know me, you know, I'm someone who's partied his rear end off for two people, basically, in life. So if I've survived multiple trips to Las Vegas, partied down the Jersey Shore, you know, dealt with nightlife in New York City, you know, my immune system is pretty good. So, you know, COVID hasn't got me, and clearly it's not going to. So I'm grateful for that. But, folks, what I'm also grateful for, and I talk about this all the time, again, as I said, as someone who's played in organized sports, you know, you're part of a team. And you may not always like your teammates. Together collectively for a common goal, and that's to excel as a unit, as an entity. And that's what we do at Insider NJ. As I mentioned again, you know, Max Pizarro and I don't like each other, and, you know, Jay Lasser and I, we don't like each other. Fred Snowflack, I'm a big fan of his. He's a big fan of mine. And but another guy who I consider a friend, and he's just an amazing writer. I love him as a journalist. He drives me a little crazy sometimes. I'm not going to lie to you. Some of his views kind of drive me crazy. But he's as great a journalist as there is in the state of New Jersey. Folks, he's a regular here on the show. He's the great Alan Steinberg joining us right now on Politically Direct. What's going on, bro?
Hey, I love being a teammate of Fernando Uribe, and I love being part of his team. And we're like the old Brooklyn Dodgers. You know, we'd have arguments in the clubhouse, but we go out and win.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's the team effort that makes Insider NJ, Alan, like, as successful, because it's very different working parts, very different personalities. And at the end of the day, man, I think really, like, and I said this on the air, I think much of the dislike that exists, let's say, between Max and I and Jay and I, it's just good old-fashioned testosterone. It's guys being guys. That's it, you know? I think that's the
that's
most
professionalism.
Yeah, that's just the most simple explanation I can think of. But, Alan, how are you, bro? I know you got vaccinated some time ago. How's everyone? How's the family? What's going on?
Thank God we're all well. It's very strange, though, my emotions as of late. It's wonderful to be with my family again. That's the best thing of all. However, you know, I go to New York and see the family at least once a week. And when I started going back, it was so weird getting on the train and nobody else being on the train. I'd get on at Edison, and I always mm-hmm. loved New York for the energy. It's the town of energy. And you'd go into
yep,
Penn Station
right.
and see nobody there. But even worse, the lack of commuting. I've thought about doing a column on this. I will at some point. I have plenty else ahead of it. The lack of commuting from New Jersey, I think, has really hurt New York in terms of the restaurant trade and all the rest. And I don't think New York will really get its recovery going until people start coming in from New Jersey again. I'm a big opera fan, and I love going to the opera. And I was able to get the tickets I wanted pretty quickly. So how to reunite as a region, I think that's a key.
No, I agree with you. And listen, as a guy who loves Broadway, loves off-Broadway productions, love going to plays, you know, I was in Manhattan last week at a Manhattan Republican Party dinner and mm-hmm. met some of the candidates in New York City, you know, running for mayor, running for public advocate, running for comptroller. So it was interesting, you know, like the Upper East Side looked alive, and it was great to see that, you know. It was people out in the street eating,
that is
people
great.
Out. Yeah, it was a great, great scene. And, of course, you know, I'm sort of counting the hours until Bill de Blasio is no longer the mayor. But who knows who New York gets stuck with this primary race. There are a bunch of clowns here in this race, Alan, in New York. But we'll get to that later. Everyone,
all right,
I
have my own
that.
Prediction on that. I'm predicting Eric Adams, but I'll be glad to talk to you about it.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about it later. But let's go around the state a little bit here. Alan,
sure.
Obviously a couple of your columns recently really caught my attention, but let's go around New Jersey a little bit. And, you know, it was reported last week by Insider and also NJ.com apparently that New Jersey's taking their first step in banning contracts with ICE altogether. So just for our audience that maybe aren't aware, you know, for years, hundreds of undocumented immigrants awaiting trial have been held in New Jersey detention centers under contract with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. Now, apparently on the heels of Essex County announcing it would end its contract with ICE, lawmakers are advancing a bill that would prohibit counties, municipalities, and private prison operators across the state from entering contracts to, quote, house or detain individuals for federal civil immigration violations. Now, the bill in the state Senate, S-3361, was voted out of the Law and Public Safety Committee along party lines, with four Democrats supporting the measure, while two Republicans voted against it. And then, of course, the Assembly companion bill, A-5207, is not yet scheduled for a vote in the Assembly Law and Public Safety Committee. Obviously, it has to pass both the Assembly and the Senate before heading to Governor Murphy's desk. The bill also wouldn't just stop local and state governments from agreeing to the contracts. It would bar the renewal of any existing contracts, which include the facilities in Bergen and Hudson counties. So, Alan, you know, I talked about this a lot on other episodes of you know, Politically Direct and my other show on Monday nights. Alan, you know, one of the things that bothers me about the woke crowd in this state and the left is it just seems to me that they can't see the forest from the trees sometimes. And when it comes to these ICE contracts, you know, never mind the fact that, you know, and sometimes this is what bothers me about progressives and liberals in New Jersey, Alan, that I don't know, maybe they slept through U.S. history. Maybe they slept through civics classes. I don't know. But, you know, we've been detaining people along immigration violations going back to the 90s. Okay, going back to when ICE was not ICE, it was back then it was INS, it was Immigration Naturalization. So after 2003, when the Department of Homeland Security came about, obviously agencies were reorganized. So we have ICE as in its present state. And, you know, since the days of George W. Bush and then Barack Obama and then Donald Trump and now Joe Biden, you know, ICE has been an agency that monitors, you know, and enforces, you know, God forbid, immigration law. And I don't know about you, Alan, sovereignty is important to me, okay? You go to Latin America, you go to Europe, people believe in borders. People believe in preserving sovereignty. And no one's calling my dad's homeland racist. No one's calling Colombia, the government, bigoted or xenophobic or anywhere in Europe. I just think that sometimes, you know, it just seems like the legislature's caving to these woke idiots. And I'm sorry, Alan, it's to me, you know, you look at these people being detained. Okay, there are some dangerous people, there are some other, you know, basic violators, whatever, of immigration law. But the problem is that these contracts are beneficial because, number one, it keeps them close to their families as they're awaiting trial, because a lot of these attorneys that represent them are doing it pro bono. So why make it more difficult for these people being detained to see their families or see their attorneys when, guess what, you end these contracts, they can easily get relocated to Mobile, Alabama, or Topeka, Kansas. And then these same idiots from the left in the state will complain, oh, well, why can't people who are undocumented see family or legal counsel? Because you bitched and moaned to end ICE contracts. So, Alan, these people drive me crazy. They really actually – they make me nauseous, Alan. I want to hear your thoughts on this, bro.
I agree in part with you, okay? I am not for the voiding of existing immigration enforcement arrangements. I am not for the abrogation of ICE. I do believe you need border control. I do believe that you just cannot abide people coming in here wholesale illegally. However, I have at the same time taken a position very similar to that was taken in the administration in which I served under George W. Bush, that there should be an accelerated pathway to citizenship. I believe immigration has helped our country. I believe that the prohibition of immigration during the Holocaust by the FDR administration and Assistant Secretary of State Breckinridge Long was one of the great crimes of American history. So I would agree with you. I don't want to void ICE. I do want to maintain our sovereignty, but I want to accelerate a pathway to citizenship at the same time.
Well, Alan, all fair points, but and I agree with you. But what drives me crazy again is these sort of activists and, you know, whether it's like these organizations like Make the Road New Jersey or the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice, it's like, it seems like all of these people want to be so woke and want to just sort of really, really shove this down our throats. And the problem, Alan, is that, you know, you got people in the legislature kind of acquiescing to them instead of sort of holding their ground and saying, hey, by the way, here's a newsflash. And again, this is what bothers me about these people, Alan. Not just the fact that clearly they slept through U.S. history, but now they slept through economics as well. And guess what? Here in Hudson County, for example, where there is a nice contract with the county freeholders, commissioners, you know, they decided to renew it in November of last year. There was all this bitching and moaning, all these demonstrations, these people going to the virtual meetings and sort of harping up and down. You know what the problem, though, is? We cancel these ICE contracts, and then whatever money – now, mind you, we've had less and less detainees now. It's not like the jails are flooded in Hudson County and Kearney or in Bergen and in Hackensack, okay? But, you know, the minute that these ICE contracts get terminated and that money isn't coming from the federal government, Alan, you don't need a PhD in economics to know that the freeholders slash commissioners – are going to look at, okay, how do we compensate now for this lack of revenue that we were getting from the federal government? Guess what's going to happen, Alan? Some tax is going to get raised. Something, again, it's just going to be another tax upon another tax. And then it's these same idiots that will come on and say, well, I don't know why New Jersey is so expensive. Because clowns like you, and what I mean by you, I mean these groups that are bitching and moaning, but guess what? The freeholders and commissioners have to be proactive here. They're not getting revenue. They're going to have to find it some other way. And when you raise a tax, Alan, guess what? They don't roll back taxes in New Jersey. You raise a tax, it stays there. So I just think it's short-sightedness by these organizations. And then they'll call me out or contact my producers and say, well, Fernando's a bigot. Fernando's a xenophobe. I'm not a xenophobe. I'm not a bigot. I'm just practical.
No,
I'm
that
also
doesn't make you.
Alan.
I'm going to defend you. I'm going to defend you. You're not a xenophobe or a bigot. There are times I think Donald Trump is. Now, there are times I disagree with you, but I never ascribe it to that. And I agree with you in part, let's say, on the immigration. I'm not for voiding the enforcement machinery, but I look to the future. I want to see an accelerated path to citizenship. And at the same time, I want security so that we are not letting in people who may have criminal records that may have gotten through the cracks. It's a tough subject, immigration. I really like the way Clint Bullock approached it with Jeb Bush when Jeb Bush was contemplating a run for president. That was the way I wanted to go. And unfortunately, this is a debating subject that has just gotten out of control, and there's very little constructive argument anymore. It's all about posing, and I don't go for that in politics.
No, Alan, I'm with you. And unfortunately, this gets weaponized every election season. Both Republicans and Democrats have their talking points. They throw it around like a football. And again, we keep hearing that these numbers are increasing when it comes to, the amount of people who are here illegally already. And it's just, Alan, it's 2021. It's just not sustainable what Democrats at the federal level, you know the culprits, right? The Nancy Pelosi's, the Chucky Schmuckies, you know, Chucky Schumer in New York or Dick Durbin or the AOC's. You know, it's that really progressive wing of the party that just is, this is not sustainable. You know, I get it. You know, when you look at the Statue of Liberty across the river and we see that, you know, give me your poor, give me – that's – Alan, that's great for a postcard and something on Hallmark, but it's not sustainable right now economically for this country to keep trying to do, I think, what a lot of Democrats are advocating for. I just don't think it's fiscally responsible, Alan.
Well, I want to make a note on Schumer, okay, because I've noticed something recently. Now – on the whole, I've agreed with him in part, disagreed with him, but when I was Region 2 EPA administrator, I found him very good to work with. When it came to environmental matters, he wasn't out to make any stink about something that was purely political. He was cooperative, and he really wasn't a progressive. The strange thing about Chuck Schumer is that he focused almost totally on banking issues. Now, there's a reason he did. He wanted to become majority leader someday, and he knew that getting involved and mingling with the big money powers was one of the great ways of becoming a power in the U.S. Senate. He did that. Nothing wrong with that. However, he seems scared to death of a primary from AOC. We've noticed that. As you know, Israel is one of my major causes of my life. And he has been very slow to repudiate her, and that has bothered me. I don't think he's going to have a problem in a primary against her. I don't know why that is. But the Democratic Party have really, really gotten my goat this past week. I like Joe Biden. I'm a fan of his. I thought he handled the situation in the Middle East very well. But the Democratic Party is often immobilized. by their far left, just as the Republican Party has been horribly immobilized by the far right. Case in point was the Marjorie Taylor Greene matter, where it took until today for Kevin McCarthy to condemn this vile, wretched human being that she is. So I've got problems on both sides of the aisle.
No, I hear you. I hear you. And, you know, again, what's really frustrating is whether it's this issue about immigration or obviously what's going on in the Middle East, which we'll touch upon later, but it just seems like it becomes so weaponized, not even during election seasons, but it just becomes weaponized in this news cycle. And I've always said this. I mean, unfortunately, the liberal media, the majority, obviously, of media is liberal. I mean, they don't do any favors, I think, to people that, you know, it's almost like I was having this conversation off the air with a colleague of mine. And Alan, and I wanted to pick your brain about this, because is it possible, ideally, that you can say, hey, I can support Israel and be pro-Israeli, but at the same time, I may not always be a fan of the government, or, you know, I'm not too thrilled that we give as much as we do in funding every year to Israel, you know, the country, the government per se. It just seems like when you say that publicly, that's viewed as anti-Semitic. Alan, I don't know about you. I don't think you can still be pro-Israel, but also be like, well, as a country, the United States, we need to be a little more fiscally responsible in who we're giving aid to. It just seems like
No, I don't have a problem with that at all.
Okay.
I agree with you. I think one can be critical of Israel and Israeli government policies and not be anti-Semitic. And I may totally defend those policies and argue with a critic, but I don't think that makes the person anti-Semitic. I think, though, one does become an anti-Semite when one questions the very right of Israel to exist and questions Israel's right to defend itself. That's where you get into anti-Semitism. And that's the problem I have with the AOCs of the world, with Rashida Tlaib, with Ilhan Omar. That's when their views go into the territory of anti-Semitism.
No,
I think one has
those,
to be very careful with defining terms.
No, Alan, they're full-blown anti-Semites. I mean, let's be real. Let's call it what
I agree.
They're full-blown. I mean, it's on steroids, to be fair.
I agree.
I mean, it's on steroids, you know. And unfortunately, you're having a really progressive wing of the party that just seems to be very, you know, sort of so pro-Palestinian or pro-the Palestinian cause that I think, and unfortunately, again, the liberal media, they're complicit too, Alan. They're enabling this too, though.
Oh,
to be
100%.
Fair, you know, CNN, the MSNBC, The New York Times.
Well, I'll tell you what got
just,
me. Uh-huh. I'll tell you what got me. I was watching Chris Hayes during this past week, and I wanted to throw my TV set out the window.
He was just ridiculous.
Some of the worst journalism I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to contact CAMRA, the committee for, you know, Fair Middle East Reporting, about the way he conducted himself. It was just disgusting. So I've got a problem with media. I have a problem sometimes with media that is either too right or too left. I want responsible for media. I want the person who is going to make an argument over the media to defend himself or herself in a cogent way. But stop with these agendas that are just vitriolic. And Chris Hayes was just outrageous.
Well, I mean, listen, it's typical of MSNBC. I mean, it's not really good journalism over there. So that's not
surprising.
Well,
no, they have some people. Look, I'll tell you one person they have that I disagree with very strongly. But he does state facts in a cogent way, okay, and that's Ali Velshi. I have a strong disagreement with him. But I like listening to him because I sometimes feel as if I'm debating him and I'm thinking of the points I would raise. But I think he and I could have a good civil debate. And I think there is logic in what he's saying, even though I may agree with its validity, I may dispute its soundness. So there are journalists like that over there. I think Brian Williams is not bad, but I think that someone like Chris Hayes is so vitriolic, is so has such an agenda that it clouds him to reason, it clouds him to logic. The journalist I like best over at MSNBC is Ari Melber, because he does give opportunity for people to dispute his views. And his coverage on Trump, I think, has been excellent.
Well, you know, Ali Velshi, you know, like a lot of people at MSNBC and CNN, they obviously have an agenda when it comes to certain opinions. But, yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Again, speaking here in New Jersey, interesting article that was referenced last week by former Assemblyman Michael Patrick Carroll. I don't know if you ever check out his social media. I follow him, you know, really intently, and I, you know, listen to, well, I read a lot of those essays that he writes in Facebook posts, which are, you know, sometimes they're very thought-provoking. I think Michael knows what he's doing. I think the former Assemblyman knows what he's doing when he's posting as much as he does and what he, you know, in terms of what he writes. And he referenced a really interesting, you know, he mentioned last week, and this is something that I think got a lot of attention, and along the lines of what's going on in the Middle East, apparently Netanyahu's son last week took to social media and started recirculating footage of Palestinians that were celebrating the 9/11 attacks. We all saw those videos, right? They're all over CNN, all over MSNBC, Fox, and everything. And it seemed like the former Assemblyman is making the assertion that maybe, again, not to harp on this too long, but that, again, the media is not being fair here because, you know, it seems like they're kind of giving a pass to these sort of optics about Palestine when, you know, these are pretty disgusting videos. And as we're approaching the 20th anniversary, I can't believe it's 20 years already, of the 9/11 attacks. I mean, I look at the skyline every day. It's very different for me than it was growing up for me. And, you know, was this a smart move, you think, by Netanyahu's son to sort of stir the pot a little bit with this?
Well, I am not a fan of Bibi Netanyahu, although I defended him on a few things this week, which I can get into, but I definitely am not a fan of his son. I think he's just totally irresponsible. He doesn't contribute to an informed debate, an informed discussion of issues. I don't disagree with Michael Patrick Carroll on that. He has a right to express his opinions, but he doesn't do so in any way that contributes to good discourse.
No, I mean, Bibi, that's fair.
You know, Bibi, I have my own issues with. I've met him 4 times now on a personal level. I can't stand him.
Sure.
He's one of the most dislikable people I ever met. But he is a brilliant polemicist. He really is brilliant. We're going to find out how corrupt or not corrupt he is as a result of this trial. But I defended him on one thing, and I'll tell you what it was. He has been accused of politicizing the Israeli-Arab conflict and getting into American domestic politics on the side of the Republican Party. I thought about this. He had no choice but to do this because the Democratic Party started conducting a full-scale war against Likud very early on. The first Likud prime minister was Menachem Begin, and Jimmy Carter did everything possible to discredit him. It was disgraceful. And not only that, Jimmy Carter later visited, in the course of reviewing an Israeli election, or a Palestinian election, he visited the gravesite of one of the great terrorists of all time, Yasser Arafat.
I think that
Netanyahu may have gotten into the domestic politics here, but he had no choice. He felt that he wanted Israel to have American support. He saw the Democratic Party more and more going into a Palestinian direction, and he felt he had to do it. It's regrettable that he felt that way, but I've become a little sympathetic to him on that, although, as I say, personally, I'm not a great fan of his.
No, understood. I just want to get your thoughts on that. Some other news here I want to pick your brain about. It was reported last week in the New York Post that it seems like Florida is almost becoming like the sixth borough for New York with the just the record amount of people relocating to Florida. Obviously, New York leads the way. But secondly, on the list, and here are some interesting numbers, New Jersey was the runner-up. And from April of 2019 to April 2021, New Jersey has had more than almost 54,000 people leaving the state and relocating down to Florida. And, you know, I've said this a lot, Alan, and, you know, maybe I'm biased because I love the state of Texas. You know, I'm a big Cowboys fan. I love my boys. And I love Texas. I'm going to Miami on Wednesday. Tomorrow, as a matter of fact. So it just seems that, you know, even before COVID, you know, New Jerseyans said, hey, listen, New Jersey's just becoming way too expensive to live in. And let's be honest, and I know this is probably going to ruffle some feathers, but You know, you look at governing like Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott. Those are governors I like. I'll take them any day of the week over Ned Lamont, you know, Andy Cuomo over there when he's not too busy groping women. And, you know, the emperor, you know, himself here in New Jersey, Phil Murphy. I'm sorry. You can't blame people for moving down there. New Jersey's a mess. And you look at the way DeSantis and Abbott govern. I'm sorry, man. Those are governors I want to have. I'll tell you that right now. Your thoughts, man.
Well, I don't like them as governors. In fact, of all the governors on both sides of the aisle from those areas, the only one I do like is Phil Murphy. And I know that that's different from your views, but I respect your views. But let me say there's other reasons for people moving to Florida. People want to move to areas where they may find people of their same culture, the same religion. A lot of Jewish people move to Florida. Now, I want to tell you something. It has nothing to do with culture. I can't stand Florida. It was a wonderful place for my late parents to live, but I found it to be the most boring place on earth. And I don't care what the costs are. I just love New York, the New York region, because it has energy here. You're a sports fan like I am. There's nothing going to a game at the Garden or a game at Barclays Center. There's no place on earth when it comes to sports like New York and New Jersey. I have all the kosher restaurants I want here. I have the Metropolitan Opera, and that's the greatest opera in the country. So unless I had to move for my health, I would never move out of the New York, New Jersey region. And we also have here the greatest mass, for all the problems, we have the greatest mass transit system I've ever seen. I know there are problems. But, you know, where I live in Highland Park, I can get in on a freezing cold day into the Metropolitan Opera House in around a half hour from where I live. I'm not exaggerating. I don't even have to go outside. You know, I take the train into Penn Station. I then get on the one subway, and I'm out, and I'm at the opera watching the greatest music in the world as far as I'm concerned. So I think younger people are moving to Florida because there's broadening opportunity there in terms of the financial industry. I know I did an article about firms that were starting to leave. I did this in the middle of the COVID, where firms were leaving, financial firms, big firms, branches of Goldman Sachs were rumored to have being moved there, some of their infrastructure divisions, things like that. And that did concern me. And I think younger people read that and they say, hey, I can have warmer weather and move to Florida and still be in the same business. There's more an opportunity for that now. Having said that, I'll take bad weather. I'm used to it my whole life. I would never move anywhere for weather unless my doctor said I had to.
No, Alan, I hear you. And listen, all valid points. But I think at the end of the day, and this is where even the political element of it comes up, it's always interesting to me. I have a lot of friends from graduate school that grew up in the Midwest or a little bit in the South, and they come here and they're like ultra annoying liberals, and that's fine. But it's always interesting to me when they say to me, hey, you know, I'm having a going away party, I'm thinking about moving down to like one of the Carolinas or Georgia or Florida. It's just New Jersey's just ridiculous. It's too expensive to live here, the taxes and all that. I'm like, okay. And I laugh because in the back of my mind, Alan, I'm like, well, guess what? There's one party responsible for that. It's not mine. So, you know, hey, you know, it's not conservatives like me that, you know, influence policy in the legislature. That's just not the case. And I laugh. And we always have like this funny banter. But then what drives me crazy is you leave New Jersey or New York, for example, and they move south or a little bit more Midwest. And I love hearing people say to me, oh, well, you know, and they still get involved in politics. I have a couple of friends from grad school that are like activists, and they're trying to like, I think, run campaigns down in Florida or in Georgia or whatever. And I'm always laughing. I'm like, wait a minute. Do you realize how tone deaf you sound when you're leaving New Jersey because A, taxes are too high and spending's too high and it's too expensive to live here? So you want to move to Florida with no death tax, no state income tax, and you want to try to influence campaigns because you want to make Florida blue. You left a blue state because it sucks, and now you want to go to a state that's doing better economically, but you want to make it blue? Like, do you realize how short-sighted you are here? And they laugh. And
no, your point's valid. The only thing I dispute, well, I mean, it's not really a dispute. there's the reasons for a higher cost of living down there. There are reasons outside of politics or economic policies. You get what you pay for. Something like Metropolitan Opera, to produce an opera, it's going to cost a lot of money. You're not going to get that quality of opera. You may get something in Miami, but it's not going to be the same as the Met. You're going to get, in terms of sports, you're going to get the most exciting region in the country, even when the teams are bad. So there's going to be a demand for tickets. It's going to cost more. There's always going to be a cost differential between New Jersey, New York, and Florida. You have other regions down there that are starting to really take off, like North Carolina, Georgia, the Atlanta region. This is all good. But my reasons for living here have very little to do with politics. I just love what's available here. I get what I pay for. Yes, it is a higher cost of living for me, especially as a senior citizen. The other thing you have here that is much better than Florida is medical care. Medical care is far better here than in Florida. And, for example, I go to Mount Sinai for everything. And I have Medicare now, and I have the supplemental. I'd have to be crazy to move anywhere else. And, you know, I have certain health conditions as a senior. I'm feeling better and better, but I can go when I go to Mount Sinai, I actually have an exciting day. You know, I get to see all my doctors like it's a shopping center, and the health care is terrific. So, again, health care, you know, the doctors, the quality of doctors are greater here. It's going to cost you more. But, you know, I'm willing to pay that price as long as I can afford it.
No, I hear you. And listen, all valid points, man. I always find it funny when I hear a lot of friends of mine identify as not so much Democrats, but as liberals or progressives or woke or whatever. It's just like, wait a minute, you're leaving New Jersey because you hate it here, whether it's weather related or more about, oh, it's just too expensive. And then you want to move down to a state. And you're trying to influence the political apparatus down there because you want to make it blue. Like Texas has always been reliably red, but I'm always concerned when now I'm seeing.
I think that's changing.
Yeah, it is changing. And to me, it's just like, I scratch my head. I'm like, wait a minute. Texas is one of the best run states in the country. It has been for years. Okay. And I see people moving and it's more South Texas than Northern Texas. Like, I mean, I go to Dallas often. Pre-pandemic, I mean, I go to Dallas every year to catch a game. And I, you know, it's just a different way of life, a different setting. But the bottom line is, it's always disturbing to me. I'm like, wait a minute, you want to make Texas blue? Yeah, how about working out for you from where you came from? And it really irritates me, though, Alan, when I hear this. And then, you know, we're seeing such a mass migration of people leaving New Jersey, obviously. Again, this is pre-COVID. It's not like they're factoring in all of 2019 too. So, you know, aside from New York, I mean, New Jersey, you know, it just seems like it's cost of living continues to go up, and we'll get to Governor Murphy in a moment, but it just seems like the budget keeps going up every year. It seems like Democrats in the legislature think we print money in Trenton, and they're just, I mean, if they ran their homes the way they run Trenton, Alan, I think they'd be homeless. Because I like to think in my household, like, I own a house. I budget well. I don't live beyond my means. I don't spend more than I bring into my household in terms of income. It just seems like people in Trenton are – again, I want to just blame Murphy on this. Because, you know, going back to Christie, of 8 years of Christie, going back to 4 years of Corzine, and so on and so forth, you know, governors come and go. But it's the legislature that just – they're so tone deaf on this. And – I have people in Trenton getting back to me saying, Fernando's be one of these guys, because I'm one of the few journalists, Alan, that even talks about this. David Cruz at NJTV he's not doing anything asking these tough questions. Do you think Tom Moran's doing this? Of course not. I'm one of the few guys in streaming media that's doing this. And I've had some people get back to me and say, hey, listen, you know, you're kind of known as like, you know, the Latino Tucker in many circles in Trenton. I don't know about you, Alan. I take that as a compliment. You want to call me the Hispanic Tucker? I'm all for it, bro. I love it.
The Hispanic Tucker Carlson?
Yep, correct, yes.
You're much better than Tucker Carlson. He's a bad guy.
Oh, come on, Tucker. Come on, Tucker.
No, he's evil. He's a liar. He's filth. You're a decent person. You're a true intellectual.
Oh, I thank you.
Don't degrade yourself with that.
Well, thank you, Alan. I appreciate that. But do you get what
he's
I'm saying?
Wild. I have as much use for him as proctology without anesthesia. Bad character.
Oh, my
God. You're much better than that.
Well, thank you. But getting back to that, it just seems like here in New Jersey, you know, it's election year, Alan. You know, it's sort of transition now to the gubernatorial race that, you know, it's an election year. I know you put up an article, I think, a couple weeks ago. Not a couple weeks ago. I think it was, like, just recent, about the New Monmouth poll that came out. And while
right.
the governor's polling went down a little bit, it's still in the high 50s. Alan, I'm going to make the argument here that, listen, there's nobody on the Republican side that is blowing me away. There's no enthusiasm whatsoever. And again, no disrespect to Jack Ciccarelli, but I look at the rest of the field. I look at the two, and I call them the MAGA maniacs, Hirsch Singh and Phil Rizzo. And then Brian
right.
Levine, the former Somerset County freeholder. I don't know about you. I mean, the governor's kind of, you know, I would argue this is the governor's race to lose, you know, because I think that if he's smart, I get it, you know, and everyone predicted it, you know, right before Memorial Day, the governor conveniently would start, you know, lifting the mask mandate and everything else, right? So the cynics were like, oh, watch what Murphy does right before Memorial Day, and sure enough, he's done it, fine. COVID cases have declined dramatically, thank the Lord. I'm hoping there's no spike this summer, which would be, I think, disastrous for obvious reasons. It just seems like while the governor's polling went down a little bit, he's still in a good position for reelection. But I would argue if Jack wins on primary day and Jack can just beat the drums a little on, like, okay, you know, Governor Murphy did A, B, and C. Cases have gone down. But guess what? You know, he's also hurt businesses. You know, instead of taking a regional approach, he took a one-size-fits-all to New Jersey. That didn't always work. And, you know, again, the governor is a little vulnerable. He's in a good Listen, he's in a great spot to get reelected, the first time since Brendan Byrne, which is going back to like 40-something years. But I think
right.
Murphy cannot get overconfident here. I think if New Jerseyans – I think there's a silent majority in New Jersey that just – if you saw the polling recently, while he was polling at 53%, I think 54, there was still like 46% in that same poll that said that they that feel that he deserves to get reelected. That's not a promising number. And I think if you're in the inner circle of Phil Murphy – that number's got to concern you a little bit.
There's two reasons that Phil Murphy will win without much problem, and that's Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a catastrophe in New Jersey. He is despised here. He's despised here because of all the things I harp upon all the time, the bigotry, the misogyny, the xenophobia. You're none of those things, but he's all of those things. And now
mm-hmm.
with the
mm-hmm.
criminal
mm-hmm.
investigations going on, that's going to destroy him. Now, I think Trumpism will outlive Trump. I've said that. Although it will go down in New Jersey and other states for one reason, that public is going to see that you can't win with that as a guiding political philosophy. But what Jack Ciccarelli did was just so self-destructive. He felt in order to win the primary, he had to wrap Trump around him. So he never took a position at all on the insurrection. That's a killer in this election. They're going to have a ball with him on that issue, and on that issue alone. And he never took a position on Marjorie Taylor Greene. If he takes it now, it's too late. It's not the ideology of conservative ideology. I used to love Brett Shundler. I agreed with him most of the time, but Brett had no bigotry. Brett was a guy who aspired to the best of people's ideals. I really liked him. Donald Trump is a bad character. He's not Brett Shundler. And he doesn't have an ideological message. And I think that as a result, and Jack Ciccarelli could have been that guy. He could have had that kind of message. He's a good guy. But he wrapped Donald Trump around himself. He is going to get defeated very badly. I've never changed my view of that at all.
Well, I mean, listen, the governor's in a good spot to get reelected. I would argue that I think the talking heads or the powers that be within the state Democratic committee, you know, Chairman Curry and everyone else. I mean, I get it. It's a smart tactic to kind of lump the former president in with whether it's Ciccarelli or, well, I mean, listen, Hirsch Singh and Phil Rizzo, I think, and the reason I call them the MAGA maniacs is because they're very much, I think, in sort of like the narrative of like, being staunch Trump supporters and supporting certain policies. Well, I think Ciccarelli's kind of danced around it. And I think that, A, that's turned off some Republican primary voters. I don't think it's going to turn off enough of them. I think Ciccarelli wins on June 8th. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think it's going to be close. I think Ciccarelli wins walking away that primary. I think a lot of people talk about Singh and Rizzo as having a good social media following. But Alan, we both know this. We're smart enough guys to know that social media clicks and likes and views, that doesn't always translate to votes. It doesn't translate to people physically going to vote. And I think that's, I think, the misleading dynamic that no one's talking about. Yeah, I get it. Phil Rizzo has a nice cult following. And I don't mean cult like in a negative way, but like he has in a short amount of time.
No, it is cult following.
Well, you know,
that's exactly what
it
is.
Yeah, in a short amount of time, he's raised some money. He's gotten good footing on social media, fine. But again, I don't think that translates. You know, Jack has been at this for 3 years. He's gone up and down the state. He's gotten plenty of endorsements from county committees. He's, you know, again, he's probably the establishment candidate. And I get it that people like Singh and Rizzo and Levine are sort of trying to portray themselves as, hey, we're the outsider. We're not the establishment guy. Well, problem is that, you know, you need endorsements from the county committees and the party. And I don't think Singh and Rizzo can do that. Again, they can get thousands of views on a Facebook video. They can get thousands of views on Instagram Live. That's great. But that doesn't translate to votes.
You're going to have a very low turnout primary, very low. There's very little enthusiasm out there. And I think the increase in the African-American vote, which I think is a very healthy thing for democracy, is going to be felt in this election as well. And Cittarelli, the whole Republican Party has political halitosis when it comes to the minority community, the African-American community. I think that that's going to be a huge factor for Phil Murphy. He has been an environmental justice governor, which I favor very strongly. And I think the increase in vote by mail, which is something I also favor, and voting rights, is a huge cause in the minority community. He's embraced and he's acted on both those causes. So I think the minority vote plus anti-Trump sentiment among independents, I don't give Cittarelli a chance. I really don't. And I'm not saying that with any greed, although Phil Murphy's a friend of mine, we've become friendly. I don't say that with glee. I'd like to see a competitive Republican Party, and you're not going to have that in the near future because of what I blame on Trumpism.
Well, I mean, again, I think here in New Jersey, though, I mean, looking at this race, I mean, listen, the state's reopening more. Obviously, this Friday, I believe the mask mandate is being rolled back. I think there are still some concerns of people out there, right, Alan, that, hey, you know, not everyone's getting vaccinated. Again, and I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I have not gotten vaccinated yet. But, I mean, again, I know that going back to school in September when I have to be back on campus, I get it. I'll have to get vaccinated. I'll probably do that before. I'm not going to wait until Labor Day.
But well, I got it. So you and I can still meet for a drink.
Sure, absolutely, of course. So for me, you know, and again, I mean, I don't say this as a joke, because COVID's not a laughing matter, but you know, I've been blessed with a great immune system. You know, I've survived trips to Las Vegas. I've survived nightlife in New York City. I've survived down the shore. I mean, I think I've put my body through some things over the decades that, you know, COVID thankfully hasn't gotten to me. But the point is,
I didn't have that luxury.
No, of course.
I didn't have that luxury because I have adult diabetes. I have a regular heartbeat. I had to quarantine myself for almost a year. The only time I went outside was to get the mail or take the garbage out. And I didn't go to a synagogue for almost a year. And my rabbi said, you're absolutely doing the right thing. I feel terrific now. I really do.
No, of course. Absolutely.
You know, I'm back.
Smart.
I'm living my normal lifestyle again.
But
I had to do that.
Absolutely. And I think that, again, as the state's reopening – and we're getting back to normal. Again, we got the, we obviously got that stimulus package from the federal government, you know, billions of dollars coming to New Jersey. And I wanted to pick your brain on it because it just seems like, well, all right, you know, Governor Murphy's getting a nice check from Washington. Okay, and I think that's going to help people forget about what's going on. And I think that the pockets of the state that are still annoyed with Murphy, those aren't enough to sort of overcome the big numbers in the cities, right? Like Jersey City, Newark, Patterson, Trenton.
Agree.
New
it's
Brunswick,
not enough to overcome
Camden.
The majority vote.
Yeah, no, it's not. And it's not enough. I get it. People are pissed off and annoyed at Murphy. I just don't know if that translates to a real, like, angry vote against Murphy. And listen, the only thing Jack can do is come debate time in the fall. Because, listen, it's the summer. People are going to forget. Listen, if we're out and about, if we're down the shore, if we're day drinking, if we are going to things, right, we're going to Yankee Stadium, we're going to a Citi Field, we're going to playoff games, right, you know, at Barclays, at the Garden, whatever. We're trying to get back to normal. You know, people's memories in New Jersey are short, Alan, and people might just be like, well, all right, well, Murphy's not too bad. I don't like him, but I can live with him. And I think if that's sort of like just complacency.
I'll take that one step further, okay? Mm-hmm. I agree with your analysis, but there's another factor, and that is that the political demographics of New Jersey have changed radically. It used to be that for a Republican to win, he needed to get over 100,000 margin at what is called the Northwest Quadrant, Morris, Sussex, Hunterdon,
yeah.
Warren,
mm-hmm.
and Somerset.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If he came out of those mm-hmm. five counties, or she came out, like in the case of Governor Whitman in 1993, you come out of mm-hmm. those as a Republican with 100,000 margin, you're going to win the state. But look what's
yep.
happened. You've had a great movement towards the exurbs. Somerset is now a Democratic county. It's amazing, but
yeah.
it is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Morris
mm-hmm.
is trending purple. It really is.
Yeah.
And Hunterdon, Sussex, and Warren are small counties. For a Republican to win now, he or she has to have a huge margin in two counties, which have become more Republican, and those two counties are Monmouth and Ocean. Now, I think
yeah.
Cittorelli can probably do well in those counties, but he won't be able to get the third aspect. The third aspect is for a Republican to win, he or she has to capture a highly populous county that at one time had a Republican trend. That county would be Bergen County, but I don't see Cittorelli doing very well there. That county is pretty has a pretty solid Democratic organization. Probably have a big vote out this fall. It's not a county of a lot of discontent. And so I tend to look at elections in New Jersey demographically and geographically, and it's not in the cards for Jack Cittorelli.
Yeah, I mean, it looks tough, and at the end of the day, you know, listen, I kind of go back to that poll, which is weird. And again, we've all learned that we can always trust polls, but I found it really weird that the same poll that had him at an approval rating of like 54-something percent, 55 maybe, you know, there was still 46% that thought that he should get reelected. I'm like, wait a minute, this poll doesn't make sense. You can't tell me he's still polling above 50% in an approval rating, but that same poll is telling us that, well, less than half of the state believes he should be reelected. There's something up with the numbers.
No,
here,
but that's
I don't
always,
know. I'm not buying
there's
it.
Always a differential there. There's always a differential
yeah.
there with the reelect and the approval because people tend to feel if they approve a governor – that, well, he should be doing better. I approve him, but he or she should be doing better. So that doesn't really faze me. What I think that was the terrible news for Cittorelli out of that poll was that in order for a Republican to win in New Jersey, you got a registration edge of 1 million votes that Democrats have. You need a breakout issue. You need an issue where the public is really upset about the incumbent. And the hope was that that issue would be Murphy's handling of the pandemic. But he came
mm-hmm.
out with majority approval. As long as he has majority approval on that issue, he is not going to lose the general election. There's no issue that mobilizes any anti-Murphy sentiment. And that's as simple as that. That was the big news out of the poll.
You're right. And I think that is also the disadvantage that Republicans have here, where whatever Jack or the Republican establishment has tried to throw against the wall, it hasn't stuck yet. Now,
nothing
again, in Jack, yeah, it's not sticking, yeah. And Jack, you know, listen, Jack's Hail Mary is going to have to be at the debates where, you know, he's going to have to kind of go after Murphy. Now, again, that's September, October, you know, again, it's the summer months have come and gone. If people are back to normal, you know, people start paying attention, right? Come September, come Labor Day.
I agree.
People forget about people start paying attention. Now, again, between now and then, Jack has to really kind of hammer home on, you know, aside from COVID, you know, let's see what the new budget looks like. You know, let's hammer, you know, I mean, again, case in point, you know, New Jersey got billions of dollars from Washington. And here's Phil Murphy saying, hey, we're going to take some of that stimulus money and I'm going to create a fund, for example, on, you know, for $40 million so we can cut, you know, checks to illegals. I mean, Alan, this is the tone deaf stuff that drives me crazy about Democrats in New Jersey. It's like, can you worry about citizens? Can you worry about, like,
well,
you
may
homeowners?
Disagree, and I may not agree. I may agree with you in part, but I don't know how tone deaf it is if it's getting votes. And I'm not happy about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's easy here because New Jersey is a solid blue state, and there is just there's so many pockets of New Jersey that, you know, when it comes to econ, I don't know, maybe they slept through it. Maybe they just didn't take it and passed it when they took it in college or high school. But it's amazing to me how short-sighted people are in Trenton when they think that these are policies that make sense. And again, case in point, you know, Democrats run the legislature. They can just shove this through, and Republicans and conservatives are powerless. And it's like, why would the governor take $40 million to cut checks? Because I get it. You want to pander to the activist crowd and those people that are trying to make noise in Trenton. I mean, how about cut homeowners like me a property tax check relief? I don't care. I mean, this might sound really, really mean-spirited, Alan, but like my illegals are not my concern right now. Like my concern is about making sure my property taxes don't continue to go up, which they are, and that Trenton is spending responsibly. I mean, I'm sorry. Illegals are not my problem. And I know it sounds
I think things are going to get worse for the Republicans legislatively. I think you're going to see, for example, in the 16th district where Kip Bateman is the incumbent, he's not running again, that seat's going Democratic. Down in the 2nd district where my favorite state senator, Chris Brown, I just love the guy. He was a real independent type of guy. He's not running again. And Vinny Paulistino is not going to do it. Vinny Mazzei is going to be elected a Democrat. He's going to win that Senate seat. So right away, that's a gain or two. There may be an offsetting Republican gain in another area. But other than that, I see the Democrats having a pretty good legislative year. I don't see them I see them at least gaining one seat. That gain of one seat, and that's not helping Jack Cittarelli either.
No, it's not. And again, if Jack's going to be at the top of the ticket, I mean, it's going to be incumbent upon him. And listen, I think I said this to you before, the New Jersey GOP, their outreach is atrocious. You know, I'm Hispanic. Again, I don't identify as a Republican. I'm an independent, but I lean very conservative. I'm more conservative along fiscal issues. Like I'm a staunch fiscal conservative. I think along social issues, Alan, I think you've been on the show with me enough. We can have good conversations and be reasonable. I think when it comes to a lot of social issues, I can be just pragmatic and rational. What I'm not going to acquiesce to.
No, I agree. That's how you are.
Yeah. What I'm not going to acquiesce to is just because I'm Hispanic that somehow, well, you know, I need to sort of drink the Kool-Aid for A, B, and C and believe in these positions that the far left in New Jersey believe in. You know, Hispanics, again, New Jersey, like the country, Alan, is getting browner. And I think, and that doesn't sit well, I think, with a lot of white people. And it doesn't sit well with a lot of black people either. But those are the demographics right now that are changing. New Jersey's getting browner. And I think the NJGOP does a really bad job in just outreach and saying, hey, let's get more Hispanics on our side and let's really hammer the point home that people like, you know, Teresa Ruiz and, you know, I mean, listen, with all respect to Loretta Weinberg, I admire her service. I applaud her. But Jesus Christ, I mean, thank God she's gone. I mean, she has had some positions over the years that I'm just like, oh, my God, for the love of God. Okay,
well, what,
fine,
what,
I get
what,
it.
What strikes me about Loretta, and she's a friend of mine, you know, socially. Mm-hmm. I disagree with her politically, but I like her. But I'm amazed at how establishment she's become. I can't get over it.
Yes.
She is no longer this activist reformer. She's supporting Gordon Johnson for election to her Senate seat. Ow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's Loretta has totally departed from her former role as a reformer. I mean, reformer state legislator. I mean, she's close to Steve Sweeney, who is not my idea of a reform candidate or reform legislator. I mean, you know, she's really. Well, I'm not saying there's nothing corrupt about Loretta, but. She is hardly any more the reformer than she once was.
No, I agree
with
you.
I find certain body humor in that.
No, I agree with you. And let me be clear. Yes, I mean, Loretta Weinberg was a maverick at one time. But, yeah, she became totally establishment. To your point, though, Alan,
did.
Again, and yeah, she very, very much. And it just seems like the NJGOP is doing a really bad job this election season where, you know, there's always a chance that Schiaparelli can kind of get it together during the summer months in the fall and kind of like pick up some momentum. But the NJGOP is just doing a bad job in pushing, you know, candidates, I think, that there are districts in New Jersey where, listen, case in point, next week I was asked, and this is ruffled some feathers, by the way, I was asked next week to be a moderator on a panel for Assemblyman Jamel Hawley. So his campaign reached out to me and said, hey, we love the interview you did with the Assemblyman on your Real Talk show, and we would want you to host a Zoom, moderate a Zoom virtual town hall. And a lot of people around the state have been like, wait a minute, hold on a second, what's Jamel Hawley doing, you know, sort of cutting his teeth with Fernando Uribe, who's a pretty conservative guy. But, you know, Jamel spoke with me off the air and said, listen, you're a fair guy. We disagree on a lot of things politically, but you're a fair interviewer. You're a fair journalist.
No, I like Jamel very much.
Yeah.
You know, he thinks outside the box, which is a very good thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to win, but he does think outside the box.
No, he does. And again, but that's an example of a race where, you know, listen, I've interviewed Joe on this show, and I like Senator Crine. You know, he's been a gentleman to me. But, Alan, we got to be honest. Joe Crine is almost like the poster child for, like, the typical machine politic guy.
No, I agree.
That is in New Jersey. And I think that's the problem that the Republicans, they just can't overcome that. It's really
well. Let me tell you. Let me cite a little history here. I started working in Trenton under Chuck Haitian back in the early 1990s, and Chuck had his share of controversy, but he was the best political and legislative leader I ever saw. Now, he doesn't get enough credit for that. When he was the speaker, he really did outreach all the ethnic groups. You know, I went to a number of Jewish things with him and gave him guidance on those things. And when he ran against Frank Lautenberg, he got 30% of the Jewish vote, which was pretty astounding, okay? He was willing to reach out. There were times when his aggressiveness may have rubbed people the wrong way. But on the whole, he was willing to think outside of the box. He was willing to introduce new legislative ideas. We had a proposal that never got far that was going to refund the school finance formula. And he was willing to go along with it. It happened that it ran into certain other legislative agendas, and then he was running for U.S. Senate. But having said all that, I think that if you ever had a Republican legislative leader, you know, who was willing to be a little risky. Now, I have to say this. John Bramlich was willing to be risky, but in a different way. It wasn't so much programmatic. He did repudiate Donald Trump, which I thought was a very good thing, and I think it may help the party in some marginal way. But it really now is a hopeless situation, you know, given the demographics, the political demographics of the state. I have very little hope for the future of the Republican Party in New Jersey.
I agree. And speaking of which, obviously, we'll transition to one of your recent columns from a couple of days ago. You're talking about looking at
Declan O'Scanlan.
Declan O'Scanlan as being a guy in 2025. Alan, I'm not going to disagree with you, man. I kind of want to put my stock more in State Senator Michael Testa before O'Scanlan. Let me just tell you why, and we'll sort of we'll back this back and forth here a little bit. But I look at Testa as a guy, and I understand that O'Scanlan is more of an establishment guy. He's been there a little bit longer. I think he has a lot of ties within the party that gives him.
No, I wouldn't call him establishment.
Because the
establishment is Donald Trump. He's anti-Donald Trump. That makes him anti-establishment. Testa's one who just wears Donald Trump on his sleeve.
What I mean by establishment is I mean like sort of like that NJGOP guy that they're tending to get behind him more. That's what I mean by establishment. And I think that, listen, you raise a lot of good points in the column about O'Scanlan, and, you know, I get it. You know, he's a guy that is still relatively young, which I think it will benefit him. And, you know, as a guy coming out of Monmouth County, I just don't know if, you know, again, I look at someone like Testa, who, you know, is a guy who's a staunch fiscal conservative, and he's a guy that I think his stock is really rising within conservative circles in New Jersey. Again, you need to win over.
That's not enough to win.
No, I agree.
That's not enough to win.
No, I agree. But in terms of who that Republican horse will be in the race, you know, because I'll tell you right now, in 2025, you know, short of, again, some miracle by Jack, right? We're looking at Phil Murphy as 8 years of Phil Murphy. And then I would argue that the next one to step up to the plate, I think the next horse in this race is probably going to be Mikey Sherrill. And I think that's
who Democrats are going to benefit. I think she's going to have problems as a candidate. I agree with you. She's going to be the Democrat nominee. But the reason, and I've been very pessimistic about the Republican future, as you know, the reason I think that she can be beaten, she has some serious shortcomings. Number one, she does not really have experience with state issues. You've got to have that. And Declan O'Scanlan, having served as Republican budget officer for 7 years, that's the best experience you can get in terms of state issues. Because you're dealing line by line in a budget with every single state program. I remember when I first came to Trenton, I said, you know, where should I go if I really want to become a generalist on issues? And they said, you should become a staffer of the Assembly Republican Appropriations Committee. That's what you got to do. And Declan knows every single program. And that's a meat and potatoes type of issue that I think would serve the Republicans very well. And plus that, I think you're going to see Trump's reputation get even much worse now with all these potential indictments coming up. I think his name is going to be mud. And Mike Testa has been the ultimate Trump guy. That's a killer.
I think even before, though, Trump, I think, you know, you look at Testa's sort of ascension into, not mainstream, but into what he's become, right, a legislator. And I think that, you know, he did it the right way in the sense of at the local level, you know, build an apparatus. It took years to build, and he got there. You know, it's almost pretty much like when you think of U.S. Senator Robert Menendez, you know, started here as mayor of Union City where I live and worked his way up progressively, like, you know, had a grassroots, had a mechanism in place, and it worked. It took years and years to keep marinating, and it worked. I think Testa's the same type of guy. Now, South Jersey, it's a different world. But I look at Testa, and I look at him as a guy that I think, you know, when it comes to conservative, not to say O'Scanlan isn't a guy that doesn't subscribe to conservative politics, he does. I just don't know if he's a guy that the establishment GOP, the NJGOP, is going to say, you know what, let's put all our eggs in one basket with this guy. I think he's a guy that, you know what, can probably be like that Bronco coming out of the gate that could be overwhelming. I don't know if he's there yet, though, Alan.
The problem with Mike Testa is that Trumpism turned out not to be conservatism at all. And I think the public is more and more aware of that. And I think that you're going to have a growing number of Republicans who are going to just find him to be anathema. I foresee a very dark future for Trumpism. I foresee a very dark future for them in the legal sphere. Now you have Alan Weisselberg and Jennifer Weisselberg ready to sing very you know, loud songs. I think Trump is going to be mud. And Testa just totally drank the Trump Kool-Aid. Bad mistake.
All right, well, let me ask you this, because I think you mentioned that there's still sort of a lingering aftertaste of Trumpism within the Republican Party in New Jersey and nationally. And I think that's a fair point. But, Alan, there's a part, I think, of people who identify as either conservatives or libertarians or Republicans. I think there's a component where, you know, I know everyone, listen, everyone makes a big deal about the 80 million votes Joe Biden got, fine, whatever. You know, we're not going to contest that. You know, that's been there, done that. But when you look at 75 million people who voted for Trump. This is the thing, though, Alan. I think that it's important to separate the fact that, yes, the 45th president lacked decorum. He had a lot of personal flaws. But, Alan, as, again, and I'm a policy nerd, So I'm talking to you in this perspective as just a straight up policy nerd. When Trumpism is, yes, that persona, that grandiose, that bombastic persona. I get it. There's an optic there.
It's the incitement of an insurrection, period, then.
Okay. Oh, okay. What I'm saying is that along policy lines, whether it's having a lower corporate tax than any of his predecessors, whether it was criminal justice reform, whether it was, you know, again, low percentages of unemployment, job creation, all that. Alan, there are people that subscribe to that and just say, hey, you know what? I don't really like him as a person, but I can live with it because of A, B, and C policies. Alan,
think he was successful at that. Successful with job creation. No, not at all. And look at how bad things are now, trying to come back from the mess he left behind. I don't think he's viewed as a success. The way he handled the coronavirus pandemic was the worst the worst executive incompetence we've ever seen in this country. I don't think he's viewed as a success.
Hundreds of thousands of
people dying.
I understand. I'm not trying to quantify success. What I'm trying to quantify is I think that there are people that maybe don't subscribe to Trumpism in the sense of, you know, the character and the lack thereof, whatever, and the presentation and the pomp and circumstance and the braggadocious nature. I think there are just people that subscribe to an ideal of, I mean, listen, case in point. I was laughing yesterday on Facebook, I posted something about, you know, I get it. Joe Biden really, really lucked out because he kind of played it smart. There was just enough of an anti-Trump sentiment in the country that got mobilized and said, you know what, we just want him out of office. We're not thrilled with Joe Biden. And let's be honest, there's nothing to be thrilled about. I mean, just yesterday he broke another campaign promise about student loan forgiveness, and I'm laughing at all these progressives that are now bitching and moaning. Well, what do you think?
Almost everybody breaks some promises, but he's come through on a number of things very well.
I understand. But Joe Biden's gotten some grief now about the border, about the fact that, you know, obviously this yesterday, it was such a stunning
every
campaign.
Every candidate gets grief.
No, of course. And, you know, Biden had the fortune of there was enough of an anti-Trump sentiment to get Trump out, and that's what happened. But at the same time, it's almost to the point of, you know, I talk to people that voted for Biden that weren't even really staunch Democrats. They were just like, well, I just don't like Trump. I'm like, okay, well, so the grass is greener on the other side. And the response usually is, well, I can live with Biden. That's not very inspiring to me. I'm sorry. So when I hear people on the left,
you know what?
It's
the negative. The insurrection was the worst day in this country other than 9/11. It was a horrible day where the rule of law was just totally destroyed. It was an insurrection against public order. It was a lack of respect for the election machinery, which is vital to a functioning, continuing democracy. It was the big lie. It is everything. These are unforgivable, not just crimes. They are unforgivable sins against democracy. This man is an absolute autocrat, rebel. He's a fascist. He is a fascist. That's exactly what he is, and history's going to record it as such. And Mike Testa bought into it hook, line, and sinker. And eventually, you know, and the guys who are going to follow at the national level, Trump, like someone like Josh Hawley, someone like Tom Cotton, these guys are bad news. They're not conservatives like Barry Goldwater was. I love Barry Goldwater. I love Ronald Reagan. These guys are a bunch of reckless autocrats. They're bad news. And that's why I left the Republican Party. I didn't embrace the Democrat Party. I'm writing an article now where I'm pretty critical of the Democrats. But this is just that you are not going to see a cleansing of Trumpism. You're not going to see a rehabilitation of Trumpism. You're not going to see that. And it was always a big loser in New Jersey.
No, I mean, I hear that. And I think that, you know, I think it remains to be seen over time what's going to happen with the aftertaste. I think that there is Trump fatigue in New Jersey. I think that's also hurting Republicans running in these legislative races this year. But by the same token, too, it's almost like, you know, and we'll close with this one. You know, I just don't have any faith in sort of like the mainstream media institutions in New Jersey, Alan. You know, I don't have any faith in NJTV. I don't have any faith in PBS here in New Jersey or the Ledger, because it's just, you know, these are not journalists. They're sort of pressing or grilling the governor or legislators in New Jersey enough. I get it. New Jersey's blue. New Jersey's not going to change. There's pockets that are very, very blue, very left, very woke. But at what point are people going to wake up, Alan, and say, hey, we're getting – it's almost like who can be more woke? Who can be more left? Who can be more progressive in the legislature? And sort of force-feeding a lot of bad policies. And unfortunately, New Jerseyans, for whatever reason, are just complacent, and they're not making enough noise. And unfortunately, the David Cruises of the world, the Tom Morans of the world, are complicit because they don't question anybody in Trenton. And I think that's a disservice to you.
The voter is not going to find an alternative in Trumpism. They're not going to find that. And that's pretty clear as of now. You know, I agree. I'm not happy with the way things are in New Jersey. I think that there is a certain amount of political correctness that I think makes for no progress
awful.
At all.
Awful.
But you're not going to find it in Trumpism. You're not going to find it. Trumpism was a historical aberration. It was a historical crime, in my view. And I think the public realizes that more and more every day. Something like the resurrection will be a bad memory that goes on for a long time.
Well, yeah, listen, the optics were bad for sure. There's no question. Alan, we're going to leave it right there. You've been a gentleman to come on with me when you're always on for over an hour. We talk about a lot. We really dissect the political races here in New Jersey, I think, better than anybody. And I appreciate your time. Real quick before I let you go, maybe not a spoiler to the audience, but anything you're working on coming up, maybe you want to give us a little bit of a hint?
Yeah, I'm working on something tonight. I'm going to be multitasking because I'm watching the Nets play the Celtics on TV. I'm doing tonight on the Jewish vote, and it basically makes the point that as an American Jew, I'm not comfortable with either political party. I'm not, and it's troublesome to me, you know. And this crisis in the Middle East has brought it all home. You know, Israel is a big factor in my life. You know, I'm not an ethnocentric person that will say that Israel never does anything wrong, but in this case, they were clearly in the right, and And the criticism I'm getting from, left-wing Jews is really grating on me. It really is. You know, so I'm out there. Hopefully you'll see this article either tomorrow or in the next few days.
Okay. Well, listen, I look forward to it. As always, Alan, you're a gentleman. I want to wish you a happy Memorial Day. Certainly, you know, stay healthy. And I appreciate your contribution. And I appreciate you coming on the show and being a regular, man. That's what makes Politically Direct the success that it is when I have great guests like you, Alan. So stay healthy, bro.
I'm honored. I'm honored to come on. And one of these days, we have to discuss basketball.
Yes. You know what? We'll have to. You know what? Probably next month, as the playoffs are progressing, we'll see what's going on with the Nets. We'll see what's going on with the Knicks. And listen, I mean, as a Laker fan, you have to admit, though, even for any objective basketball fan, seeing the Garden and seeing the energy and electricity in the Garden on Sunday night, I mean, that's
it was magnificent.
You know. Absolutely. New York is the mecca of basketball. It's as simple as that. So,
no question about it.
Yes, and we'll definitely talk some baseball next month. But, Alan, God bless you, bro. Stay healthy, and thanks for always being a fan of Politically Direct.
Thanks a lot, my friend. You take care.
All right, have a good one,
bro.
Have a good one. All right, folks, it's a great episode today here with Alan Steinberg, one of my fellow colleagues at Insider. And Jay, and certainly a great guy. We can agree to disagree on a lot of things, but hey, the dialogue is always civil and cordial. And that's what you want, I think, in today's political climate. So always get to enjoy my talks with Alan Steinberg. So folks, again, if you missed any part of recent episodes, don't sweat it. You can always check out www.insidernj.com/podcast. And you can listen to all my episodes in recent memory. We've had some great guests on, which include State Assembly candidate Angela Pham, State Senator Brian Stack out of the 33rd Legislative District up here in Hudson County, as well as Al Sullivan with Tap Into Jersey City, and other great guests in recent months. So definitely want to check it out. Again, www.insidernj.com/podcast. podcast. That's plural podcast. And as a reminder, folks, you can always write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to, again, give me your name and certainly what you like about the show, what you don't like, suggestions, topics, whatever. I love to hear from you, so do write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj, and also check out my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe, and also on Twitter, hit me up at NoFilterUribe. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct with Fernando Uribe. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, check out Insider NJ for the best coverage of the political scene that you'll check out. No better source in the state of New Jersey than Insider NJ. Make sure you like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. And without question, Insider NJ continues to be the perennial source for politics here in the Garden State during the election year. There's no shortage of things to talk about or read about, folks. So always remember to start and end your day with Insider NJ. All right, folks, again, that's our show for this week here. Great to have once again fellow Insider NJ teammate Alan Steinberg. And without question, obviously, these are exclusives that I'll continue to bring you, and I'm proud to do so every single week. And, you know, whether it's on your morning commute, as we're getting back to normal, getting your workout in, whatever, folks, remember, it's real. It's here. It's politically direct. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, it's Memorial Day weekend coming up, so please party responsibly. Please be careful down the shore. Certainly, again, you know, for those of you vaccinated, stay healthy. For those who have not gotten vaccinated yet, you know, again, practice responsible social distancing. You know, wear your mask. You know, be careful. That's it. Simple as that. Let's beat this thing. Let's get back to normal once and for all here in the Garden State, folks. So, again, I appreciate you all. Again, have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. We will talk again next week. We're live coming up on Thursday, June the 3rd. I welcome New Jersey Assemblyman Brian Bergen live at 9 p.m. next Thursday, June the 3rd. You definitely don't want to miss out on that interview next week right here on the show. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, I can't say enough. Enjoy Memorial Day. Be safe out there. I'll see you next week here on Block Talk Radio. And always remember, folks, I am New Jersey's premier journalist, Fernando Uribe, saying so long. And thank you so much for listening to the show. And always remember, let's keep on talking.